I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to study the things that matter most. No, you don't. There's no test. You don't have to study anything. It's fine.
What? It'll be a studied. Test. There will be a test called the quiz.
Yes, indeed. That'll come up later. But for now, I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Scott Johnson.
Hello.
I am excited to get the weekend started the only way it should be started, with an episode of Current Geek.
I agree, and I feel like today is a special one because we got some high-techery and some tomfoolery. I'll let people at home.
We have the Thomas Edison of Chat Realm with us.
Whoa, that's all right. And then we have the tomfoolery of TMS and Coverville. But we'll get to that in a second. First, let me introduce our first guest. It is Tensor Guy. You may know him online as that, but his real name is Jaime Ruiz Avila. And he is here today as not only a regular part of our community, but now the smartest guy in the room. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello, Scott, Tom.
It's good to see you, man. Thanks for being on.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. This is a long time listener, first time guest.
Your first time guester. It may have to happen more often given your inventiveness. I don't want to give anything away, but you're in the middle of working on a pretty rad project you're about to launch a Kickstarter for, or maybe it already launched. Tell us a little bit about it so people know what's going on and they can go check it out and see it.
Well, for a couple of years, I've been working on this idea to, basically, how do you put it together? It's a hologram machine.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. You mean like the Princess Leia saying, get these records to Obi-Wan Kenobi is my only hope, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
I have some paperwork for Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's my only hope of being able to go home by Christmas.
He needs to do my taxes.
I studied physics in college, and then I went into other things. Recently, I just, it kind of irked me that it's 2015 and we don't have flying cars or dinner, 4-course dinners in the shape of a pill or any of that stuff. Yeah. But I think I could do something about holograms. So
wow.
That's what I did.
I'm really jazzed about this. If people want to learn more about it, go to tiny.cc/holovect. You can also search for holovect. Think of it as hologram and vector together. And they will take, it'll take you to see the video. You can see the Kickstarter and you can support this freaking thing. And we're not kidding though. This isn't like some fakery or some kind of, this isn't water spraying somewhere with somebody flashing light into the water to make you think you're seeing a hologram. This is like holographic, like light in the air, man.
That's actually kind of how it works.
Well, kind of, but it's still kind of, it's not exactly the same.
It's using, no, it's not. It's actually, that doesn't
really not smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not smoke and mirrors. That's what I'm trying to get at. There isn't some magical hoo-ha going on.
I have seen it in person.
Right.
It's impressive.
It's pretty cool. And why not support cool things? Because finally, holographic technology.
And when I call Jaime the Thomas Edison of Chat Realm, I don't mean that he's arrogant and steals ideas from his employees. I mean that yes. He invented something really cool.
Wait, who's Nikola Tesla of Chat Realm? Do we know who that is? Ooh,
that's a good question. Who will be Jaime's Nikola Tesla?
Oh, you guys could square off and fight. It'd be great.
I guess we can do it, Kirk and Spock style.
Yeah, that's all right. That'll work. Like that. Well, welcome to the show. It's good to have you. Also with us, my cohort in the morning on the TMS show, and also the long-running host of Coverville, the returning guest, and now current champion of Been Here the Most Times, it's Brian Ibbett, everyone.
Current champion.
The only reason he came on, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. I just have to defend my title. Yep. Otherwise, I've got other plans.
See you later, suckers.
I just wanted to be here long enough for it to be official. I'm out.
That's exactly right. Yes. How long in the show do I have to stay to retain the title?
You're required to do the test, well, and then all bets are off.
Yeah. Weigh in on that.
Yeah. It's good to have
thanks
you here.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah,
yes.
It's good to have
I
you here,
man. I love this show.
Can't
hey, thanks for having me on the Coverthon last
week. Oh,
week.
Dude. Fun. It was a blast. I'm sorry your time was so short.
I'm sorry my time was so short. That was my own fault.
Well, I was sorry that the time we had together was so short.
I didn't even know his time was short. Now I'm sorry that his time was so short.
Yeah, no. I was kind of happy before.
All right. Well,
I really brought things down, didn't I?
It's all right because we got cool news stories coming up, and we're jazzed to have you guys here. So let's do those.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
It's time for our top stories, Tom.
our top talk, where we talk about the top things from our subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. What's wrong with you? Oh, not you. You submitted some stuff. You're awesome. But those other people who didn't, what is up with them? They're not like EFC88 who submitted something at the subreddit. He wanted us to mention that last week on Black Friday, the creators of Cards Against Humanity ran a special promotion. You could give them $5 in return for nothing. It was very clearly stated on the promotion. You even had to check a box saying, I understand, I'm giving you $5 and I will receive nothing in return. They raised $71,145 and gave it to themselves. In fact, they detail what they used it for, and it ranges all over the place. One person bought themselves an iPad Pro, somebody bought themselves cat litter, and most of them gave some of the money to charitable organizations.
It seems in keeping with the general attitude and tone of Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, totally, yeah.
And for that, yeah. I applaud them. It's pretty bald-faced. Brian, we should do this for TMS, yeah?
We should do this for Coverthon. Are you kidding me? I could just...
just give why, me $5. You know,
$71,000. I only raised like $8,000.
Right, yeah. And that was for a real good cause. This thing, you just
and
gotta
be... And that
took
24 hours. They put up a web page and just went and had lunch.
Yeah.
They also made Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's that. But you know what? Talk about the, you know, we've all done Kickstarters and had to deal with fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Talk about the easiest fulfillment you'd ever have in a campaign.
Oh, see, this
like
is the best. Jamie, you're just entering into this world of like, once this thing funds, and I'm confident that it will, you guys have to do all the things you have to do to fulfill things, to feel that pressure of making sure all your backers get exactly what they had hoped for and all this sort of thing. And these guys are just getting free cash. Maybe we're going about this the wrong way.
Right.
Yeah, maybe I should just make, you know, load up a program saying, send us money. Have the hologram just...
just have it suspended in the air. Send us money, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope, like that. Right. That'd be great.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. Send money.
Yeah, I need money. Credits, space credits. It's totally fine. I don't know, man. I guess if you're as big as Cards Against Humanity and you've got that kind of pull, then you can do stunts like this and get on them, I suppose.
I think maybe we should add a new Current Geek Crate Joy loot box level that's empty box.
Hey, I like that idea. Mm-hmm. And just make sure there's it's clearly stated the box you're going to receive will have nothing in it.
Yeah.
And all we have to pay for.
And then there's no box level, which is we won't send you even a box.
That's a limited amount.
Yeah. It does seem like a thing you can't pull off a lot. Like, I like
the one without a box is the limited.
Yeah, I like that too. But if they can't just turn around Cards Against Humanity, that is, and they can't just do this every few months, right? Like, this has got to be a one-off. Oh, no.
And if anyone else tries to do this thinking, Cards Against Humanity can do it, you know, they're going to be jerks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like that million, remember, Tom will remember this, the $1 million webpage. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
he went on,
pixels.
Yeah, and he went on to do other cool things. He's got that Calm app for meditation on the App Store, which I really like. But his original plan was like, I'm just going to sell all these pixels. And then everybody, and it worked, but then everybody and their dog tried to duplicate it, and it didn't work. Everybody kind of backlashed on it.
The guy who kickstarted the potato salad as a joke, and then that took off. Like, you can't do these things usually intentionally, but in this case, Cards Against Humanity did. Although I have to say, $71,000 is a little low for those kinds of stunts. I feel like those, because they were doing it intentionally, a lot of people said, oh, that's funny, but fewer people may have given money than if it was like the first time anything like this had ever been done. Oh my God, it's so crazy.
Yeah, it's like spam, though. Just takes a certain, you know, critical mass and boom, you're in.
Or spam masubi, which just takes a layer of spam and rice.
That sounds all right. That sounds all right to me.
Yeah. Captain Kipper noted the release of Raspberry Pi Zero, which cost you $5, the same amount you could have given Cards Against Humanity for nothing, gets you a computer. It's half the size of the Model A Plus, has a Broadcom BCM2835 application processor, 512 megabytes of RAM, micro SD slot, and mini HDMI socket for an output of video, micro USB sockets for data and power, and you can get one free if you already buy, subscribe, or order the latest issue of MagPie at raspberry.org. In the UK, they're selling it at Element 14, the Pi Hut, and Pimeroni, and in the US at Adafruit and Micro Center, although out of stock is a common reaction.
The rumor I had heard, and I don't know how substantiated this is, but I had heard that they made a certain amount and they are making no more, and I don't know if that's true or
they're
stopping or what the plan is, but I hope not. I think this is a pretty rad thing. Also, my understanding is the chip that's in there is the same chip as the first model, not the second model, but the first model, and it is just overclocked. So it's running faster, but it's based on that same chip architecture for the CPU. And then the only thing this is missing is additional ports and a full-size HDMI output that the Raspberry Pi 2 has. And then the third thing I heard was, and this was interesting, that they made this decision based on something Eric Schmidt had told them, which was, you guys have it all wrong. You think you're going to go, like most companies, they make a small thing, then a medium thing, and then you're going to go make your advanced thing, and you're going to make the fancy one for $99 instead of the $30 Raspberry Pi 1 and 2. What you need to do is make this really inexpensive so that these can go everywhere and all over the place, end up in parts of the world you'd never expect, end up in schools in a massive way, like all these things. Like, you'll make more money doing this than you would if you tried to make an advanced version. I don't know if any of that's true. It's interesting, though, isn't it? This idea go smaller and you'll have a broader appeal. But Tom, how do they make any money? How is it possible that $5 is enough to cover cost?
You know, it probably covers the cost. These are parts are cheaper and cheaper all the time. It's very small. So I don't really know what the breakdown of cost is, but my guess is they're just doing a razor thin margin on this because they want to get it out there in as many hands as possible.
Yeah, pretty cool.
The problem is that you're going to spend more money to get adapters to convert your USB keyboards to work with micro USB, right? Because the typical cheapo keyboard that you pick up at Best Buy or wherever isn't going to be a micro USB socket. So to be able
it's
to actually...
It's a lost leader.
It really is. And Scott, you should be looking at... I don't know if you've already got a Raspberry Pi, but now that you got your 3D printer, you need to do some octo printing and use a...
thinking, man, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you get this $5 deal and you spend $30 on adapters to make it...
This kind of computing in a small space like this, Jaime, I was going to ask you, does this fit into your strategy with this holographic technology? And like, is this making it more possible to have this kind of computing power in a small space?
It does. And it does directly and indirectly. We could probably fit it in, for example, in future models. But what we're using right now as the main processor is an Intel Edison, which is, it follows the same trend. It's basically an Atom chip. With 1 gig of RAM and 4 gigs of storage, and they've shrunk it to size and they made it accessible for Internet of Things stuff. So it's kind of following the same trend, and I imagine that everybody's fighting to be the brain of our connected devices.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I want one of these just because. I mean, they can output this device, this $5 device can output 1080p video at 60 frames per second. Like, that's insane that you could do that with a $5 device. Now, obviously, you don't, you know, you'd need to program players or you know, have pre-constructed stuff or whatever. You got to do some things. It's not like this thing comes as a, you know, like an Apple TV or Roku, but out of the box. But I love the idea of using this like as a Plex server or a million other things. And that 3D printing stuff Brian's told me about before is very exciting. Like, it's just a cool little device. Tom, do you have a Pi? I thought you had one.
I don't know. I haven't messed around with Arduinos or Raspberry Pis or anything. That was Ayaz's thing. Not that prevented me.
That may have been who I remember. Yeah, but you were like, know what? Ayaz has got this. I'm staying away from it.
Here's what I would like to see. Just as a human being on planet Earth, something that would entertain and inform me and hopefully more people, Scott Johnson explains Arduino to Anthony Carboni.
Oh my gosh, dude.
I would pay a Patreon.
Like,
sign me up.
Okay. I'm in. Talk to somebody, get the word out to Anthony. Let's see if he's willing. And then I assume I can't have any brush up time on like getting my head around.
Oh no. Do whatever you need.
Okay.
I want to see that happen.
Okay. I'm all in on this.
The higher we auction, though, the less time Scott has to brush up before he does.
No. I want him to succeed. This is not a trick. Like, all let's right. make Scott look dumb. No. I want Scott to do, like, solve this problem. If anybody doesn't know, if you don't listen to We Have Concerns, Anthony Carboni constantly saying, like, what is Arduino? I don't understand.
He doesn't get it, and it's up to me to do it. Really, it would be a Christmas miracle. So let's see what we can do.
Exactly.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do.
Meanwhile, Zombie DR points out that the movie Momentum, which was made for $20 million, opened in the UK and earned £46 on opening weekend.
Whoa.
It's about $65 in the U.S. The movie was shot in South Africa, stars Morgan Freeman and Olga Kurylenko. So this is not, this is a big budget movie with big name stars. It's about a petty criminal who finds himself involved with terrorists. So it's a timely topic. It's an action movie. And it was limited release, opened only in 10 theaters in England. Two of those theaters sold no tickets at all.
Well, it's building up speed is what it's doing.
It opened to $250,000 in Russia and $275,000 in the United Arab Emirates. So it did better there.
Wow. That's really, what does that come down to? Is that just bad marketing? Nice. I'd never even heard of it till you just said it.
Horrible reviews.
Yeah. Well, that's
if you look at this Pace magazine link that Zombie DR submitted, it just got trashed.
All right.
So, but even bad reviews, I mean, people see movies with bad reviews. It's like, it's a marketing issue, right? No, like, did they forget to leave it off the marquee, or did the tickets accidentally say Hunger Games in Theater 7 or something?
There's bad reviews and there's one of the worst films you won't see in 2015.
That actually can might pull in some folks. It must have been just really mediocre, maybe you want to, skip it.
26% on Rotten Tomatoes. That is compared to...
That's actually not that bad.
It's not that bad compared to, Pixels got 17.
Pixels at 8 or something, right?
Yeah. Some Kind of Beautiful, which is out on DVD this week. I don't even know what that is. 4%. I mean, there's definitely movies with lower scores, but they're claiming this Momentum movie is out on DVD here. So I think they're skipping theaters.
Yeah, they did a digital download simultaneously. They released it in the U.S. and didn't actually say what the numbers are. I feel like it's the kind of movie where the theater decided, well, we have to distribute it, but we're not going to market it at all. Because I didn't hear anything about it. That's the other thing.
I didn't know a thing about it. And Morgan Freeman usually doesn't. Well, I mean, he's done some stinkers, but he usually doesn't lend himself to garbage.
Right.
Maybe his famous line from this movie should be, I crawled through 2 hours of terrible dialogue and came out clean on the other side.
Yeah. Give it time. It's building up speed. It's, it's building up its movement, its motion. It's building up its, what's the word I'm looking for?
I know, it's on the tip of my tongue. I know what you mean. It's motion.
It's forward inertia. Forward inertia. I can't think of it.
Bowel movement?
Bowel movement. That's it. By the way, $46 is the antithesis of Momentum, I would say, for a film.
That's like two guys. I mean, even by accident, it must have gotten more. That movie that we want to see is not there. Oh, but there's this. Okay.
Yeah, two guys in a small popcorn or something.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
You could buy 9 whole computers with that. 9 whole Raspberry Pi Zeros with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you could
give it $65 to Cards Against Humanity for that. Dee Basinge submitted the YouTube video from Toonami Swim stating that Samurai Jack is coming to Adult Swim next year. Woo. The show ran on Cartoon Network from 2001 to 2004. Creator Gennady Tartakovsky will be the executive producer and it'll apparently pick up where it left off.
Very excited about this. I love Gennady Tartakovsky. He's done amazing work with everything he's ever done. Dexter's Lab was his first real splash, and that was great. This was amazing. He's gone on to do other things.
I loved his Clone Wars.
Yeah, Clone Wars was insanely cool.
Which is different than the Clone Wars that ran for 6 seasons.
Yeah, very different. It was hand-drawn. It was not CGI. It was. It actually made you like the prequels in a way that we hadn't to that point. It was so cool. So my daughter, who's a huge fan and has watched the repeats a million times over, she always says to me, I got to the end of Samurai Jack again, and I don't like how things ended. Mm. And I said, well, I got good news for you the other day, and I brought her over here and showed her that 10-second teaser, and she just about lost her mind. So there is a generation of people very excited about anything that happens to Samurai Jack. My only question will be, who will they replace as the voice of Aku? Because Mako died after that show ended, and he was significant in the tone of that show. So they need to find somebody who can either mimic that voice exactly or do something as good or better, because
just sample him.
So good though. Oh, he's so good. If they sample, we mean other
so
things he said.
Just take chunks from everything, all of his other lines, and
he's so good in it though. He was just amazing in it. But I'm very excited. You guys Samurai Jack fans here at the table?
I'm a huge fan. Dexter's Lab was required viewing in my family when we were kids, and my kids were younger, and super excited. Yeah. I can't wait.
It's going to be great. Brian, you like it, don't you?
I liked Clone Wars. I never saw Samurai Jack, and I know that's... Yeah, I know. There's so much that I haven't seen. I know.
You should see it. I mean, part of it was, you know, when it was in its heyday, my kids were real young. Mm-hmm. And so it made sense because that was on and whatever. But it also has this edge to it. It's not, I wouldn't call it kids programming. I would call it something weird and in between. There are moments of stunning action and like Hong Kong inspired cinema flair that you don't get in kids action cartoons.
And it's not going to be for kids now.
No, it's definitely
not. It's Adult Swim.
Yeah, it's Adult Swim, which I think it may have always sort of deserved to be there, honestly. It was always a little over-the-top violent in a way that was unusual for Cartoon Network's main lineup. I didn't care because I was just so into it. But they're also, here's the thing I'll say about it that I love the most. They were not afraid to be quiet. They were not afraid to have long moments of Jack just traveling through space. I don't mean space. I mean like, you know, traveling across a desert. And they weren't afraid to keep it quiet and not have to have constant dialogue and to tell things in weird visual ways instead of having to explain it all with words. And that is something you don't even see still. It's risky and it's weird. And it's
like comic book storytelling where you get like entire pages and panels where there's no dialogue and just the action, just the, you know.
Very much so. And yeah. But it was also had lighthearted moments and wasn't afraid to have some fun. It's very different. And if you've never seen it, I cannot recommend that one enough.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
That's great. You should watch it.
Piscator NF pointed out the IFL Science post about Washington University professor Zachary Feinstein's work to estimate the economic impact of the destruction of the Death Star on the galactic economy. He used a U.S. government estimate of the cost of building the Death Star as one data point. However, the cost of building either Death Star is not a major issue. It's debt default of a defeated empire and then the subsequent downfall of galactic banks that causes the problem, plus the fact that the Rebel Alliance likely would not be able to afford the substantial bailout necessary to create the conditions for a recovery.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. I don't even know what to do with that information.
So convert your galactic credits now. they're still worth something.
They're going to be a run on the intergalactic banks and what else? Oh. What else happens?
Yeah, just borrow a bunch of credits.
Yeah.
And go spend them at the cantina while you can.
Do you think inflation's still an issue in that world or could be? I don't know how stuff works in space, but it seems like inflation's a problem no matter where you go, right? Chance of, you know, a run on prices.
We don't have enough inflation right now in our own economy.
Yeah, we have a weird Planet
that
Money.
Happens.
Planet
that
Money happens. Had a really interesting take on that.
Maybe
that's no
the people of the galaxy should move to Planet Money.
Maybe. But they basically described how we'd eliminated it by people finally realizing it was kind of not real. Or that inflation being a problem wasn't real, that it was a normal part of just time and economy, and time plus economy equals inflation, and it's normal, and that huge jumps in inflation were caused by people freaking out.
Yeah, you don't want it to be too big, you don't want it to be too small.
Yeah, so once we quit worrying about it, it kind of went away in a weird way. But Jaime, sorry, you were going to say something.
No, I'm just thinking that probably there was a run on the banks when the Republic fell. So maybe the Empire was, you know, holding stuff firmly in their hands and not allowing, money to change, kind of like the USSR. And maybe it's going to be good now.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Maybe. Do you think?
Okay, so you're saying that the galactic financial community falls, it was only being propped up by the Empire anyway.
Yes, I'm pretty sure the Republic, well, the Imperial credit was fixed artificially by the Force, maybe?
Maybe.
Well,
oh, by the Force.
The markets that can be imposed by Mon Mothma in previously, like, you know, for instance, on Kashyyyk, where it's all slave labor,
right.
You can create an economy that didn't exist there.
Yeah.
Of course.
And Brian, it sounds, what you said, too big to fail, mm-hmm. sounds an awful lot like, I think you underestimate the power of this space station.
Hey, the good news is that there's a lot of copper tubing in the detention levels.
Yeah.
They can all be recycled if they can just find it.
Yeah, be careful. One of them has an eye in it. Right. Everything will be fine. Don't worry.
Scoop a little Dianoga out of that copper tube and then recycle it.
I know the Trade Federation has a loan plan, but I think it's a trap.
You think it's a trap? Okay.
Well done.
All right.
Well
done. Nicely done.
The banking plan will sign your treaty.
And you know, those guys always hedge their bets. I'm pretty sure that you know, they had their money in a lot of red paint. For the moment, you know, the gray was out and the white and red.
You don't know the power of quantitative easing.
See, there you go.
All right. Wayne Something submitted the paper published in the journal Science describing observations of a star being sucked into a black hole and the ejection of a flare of matter at near light speed.
All right. Wayne Something, just to be clear, is not is his handle online. It's not that you couldn't remember his last name. His name is Wayne Something.
Either,
yeah. Yeah, I guess either way. Okay, now wait a minute. So they we have observed this?
Is there a vine of this somewhere?
Click the link, and you can find an artist depiction of this.
Is there a vine?
It must be true.
I want a vine.
Yeah, I want a vine.
They actually observed a star being pulled into a black hole over a period of months, and then an ejection of matter. I mean, it's not fast. It's not something that happens super quick.
Mm. Oh, look at this. Okay.
Wow.
Basically, we have observed active galactic nuclei shooting out jets, but we had never seen a black hole outside a galactic nuclei do this. So the
idea is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the way this works is what we thought previously was that matter was so compressed and so sucked in and so whatever that it would be gone, or it'd be so minuscule that there's nothing left. This indicates that some trash is kicked out the back end.
Well, yeah, it's stuff that doesn't fall directly into the black hole necessarily, but it's the magnetic field of a spinning black hole is so fast that it will as it starts collapsing and falling in, there's a good portion of the matter that is actually getting accelerated and pulled out.
It's superheated.
So yes,
it's less like the star exploding outside of the black hole. It's more like Wile E. Coyote dropping off the cliff. There's and the puff of smoke that rises up in the air.
Oh, I see.
A little bit like that, yeah. It's ejecta, so to speak.
Right.
And it's constrained by the magnetic field that Jaime was mentioning, so that makes it even more of a jet. It's not something that's unexpected. It's just not something we've been able to observe the entire process of
before. Right.
And we didn't know if galaxies do this all the time. The Milky Way is shooting right now two jets, from the perpendicular to the lens kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
kind of like they've shown here.
Right. However, we have never seen a small individual black hole do it, and we have never seen the whole sequence of events. We just know there's a fountain in some places.
What? The galaxies are jealous. They're like, look, we're doing this all the time, and now you're impressed because this little guy does it?
Yeah, big whoop.
The hell?
Also, I'm not used to having such smart people on the show. We're going to have to
have
a meeting about that because, man, this stuff is heady. I love it, though. This is great. And listen, the more we know about black holes, the better, so that when we do make the black hole remake, it won't be stupid like the first one.
Maximilian.
Ugh. It's an awful movie.
Hey, let's talk about Rocket League then. It's coming to the Xbox.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robot Servant, for posting that link.
It was an expected thing. I expected it because the game is doing gangbusters. It's very popular. Millions and millions of people are playing it, and it is probably, financially speaking, the most successful independent game venture of the year. And the PlayStation 4 and PC versions have enjoyed a great deal of success. And because they're cross-play, meaning I can play people on that platform, they can play me, the idea of adding a whole new player base to that already active player base is very exciting for me as a player because I want more people to beat. And that game is great. So it's exciting. Any Xbox One fans here? I guess, Brian, Tom, you own one.
I do.
Well,
I
good.
Do. This is coming in February. And if you buy it for the Xbox, you'll be able to do things like use Halo and Gears of War themed cars. Yep. Otherwise, it's the same game.
They won Independent Game of the Year at the VGAs last night. Those being the Video Game Awards. And congratulations to them.
Well deserved.
Yeah. That game's great. If no one, listen, if you're listening to the show and you haven't spent any time with Rocket League, A, you missed out on the freebie that it was on PSN for a while. Or B, just spend the 19 and get it because it's absolutely worth it. And some of my most fun, laugh out loud, competitive gaming moments in years happened in that game.
Yep.
So get it. Do it.
Years,
it,
I tell you.
Years, I say. Here's another thing you can do for years or even whatever you want. That is to get in on this new Current Geek Crate. Have you heard of the Current Geek Crate, Tom?
I have because we had to spend a couple months planning it.
Yeah, we had to make it. We had to build it. You might be familiar with crate services all over the place.
Nails and boards. And
sure, all that stuff. The labor alone has been insane, but we've decided to create one, and you can go over there and get it, and you simply do it by going to frogpants.cratejoy.com. Every month, new stuff in there, unique stuff you're not going to get anywhere else, special things from special guests we might have, all kinds of cool stuff. If you're used to these crate services and you already like that kind of thing, oh boy. You're in for it now because the current Geek box will be shipping soon, and we're really excited. So get our loot, man. That's all we want you to do is get our loot.
We've got a calendar coming up in one of them. We've always got art from Scott. You'll have special writing for me. If you liked Citadel 32, I'm planning on putting a few extra short stories from that universe in there, exclusive to the crate people. So be a crate person. And we'll call you a great person because that's how we're supporting the show.
That's exactly right. This is the way we want to support the show going forward. We think it's going to be not only a great way for us to do that, but a great way for you to get stuff you'd never get otherwise. And speaking of writing, I wrote a short, very short story about a space station called the Faraday and about a guy and a robot. Oh, and okay. I am no writer, and like I am no Tom Merritt. All right. That I know. He NaNoWriMo's around me in circles. However, that'll even make its way in there because why not? Art, special items, geeky stuff. It's going to be rad. Go check it out. Frogpants.cratejoy.com. Get yourself all in there, all right? All right. It's time for the pop quiz. Check this out.
America scores and wins.
Oh, that means this thing we do is happening. There's no turning around. There's no way you can stop it. We do a little bit of a quiz. We ask you guys questions in your areas of expertise. You don't know what they are. We didn't warn you. You have no idea. We're going to start with Jamie, or Jaime, rather. People call you Jamie all the time, right?
Yeah, they do.
I knew I was going to be one that would do it tonight. Your category, sir. Oh, and when you get the question right, you hear this. When you get it wrong, you hear this. Tom will score it all up at the end. We'll see who wins. Jaime, your category is Star Wars hologram trivia.
Oh, my God. Okay.
All right. Since that was kind of the reference point for most of us growing up for holographic, you know, excitement.
Jaime may very well be the person who brings us the ability to project Princess Leia from R2-D2's head.
That's the weird bit here. I feel like we have a guy in the show who may end up dwarfing all of us in life's importance one day. I'm not kidding. One of these days we'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that time he was slumming it on Current Geek. Now he's like a award-winning scientist man. That's how this is going to go. Yeah, we knew him when.
And the Nobel Prize for holograms. A newly invented category we just made up because we were so impressed.
Yeah, I'm telling you, changing lives. All right, here's your questions. First one. Okay. Chronologically in story order, what character is the first hologram shown? So chronologically in story order, meaning prequels first. Oh. This is why it's tricky. Prequels first all the way through current, or most current. Who was the very first holographic character shown?
I think it's Darth Sidious talking to the Trade Federation.
You are correct. Nicely done. Yeah, that is exactly it. What game are R2-D2 and Chewbacca playing on the holographic chessboard?
Holographic chess?
Incorrect. It is Dejarik.
I'm going to give him a quarter point misleading question bonus there.
All right.
Who's buried in Grant's tomb?
Bobby. Dejarik is the answer, but we a quarter point. Nice job. Next up, does Darth Maul ever appear as a hologram?
This whole episode one stuff.
I know, right?
It's in some part of my brain that I think. Yes, he's in the background. I think it's like slightly in the background, or it's Palpatine says, oh, my new apprentice or something.
Oh, well, let's take that as a yes. Oh, you are correct. Nicely done. I agree. I think that's what I remember as well.
You're going to lose a tenth of a point flailing around, but you mostly got it right.
Don't worry. It won't add up to much. In Princess Leia's message to Obi-Wan Kenobi, where does she say she wants R2-D2 delivered to?
To her father in Alderaan.
You are correct. Well done.
But your father's on that ship.
Oh, no.
That's not your real father.
I rewrote history. Midichlorians. What does the holographic Luke Skywalker offer Jabba the Hutt for Han Solo? This was in Return of the Jedi. What'd you say again? Sorry?
the droids.
You are correct.
Spoiler, I haven't watched it yet.
R2 and C-3PO is the correct answer. Nicely done.
About Star Wars
these
holograms.
Two droids.
In what prequel does a holographic version of the Death Star appear?
Oh, prequel.
Yeah.
So I think it's in Geonosis and somebody's shown it to somebody else, Dooku or something. So that would be two.
Jamie is killing it. Jaime is killing it.
Again, losing a tenth of the point for saying it correctly as if it weren't correct.
Whatever. I like his process. When Chewbacca and R2 are playing Djarik, as we now know it, what piece does R2 use to kill one of Chewbacca's pieces? Who would know this?
It's the guy with three legs, and he goes, and picks it up and throws it.
You're not wrong about that. Tom, you're the judge, so he's right about that, but the name is technically the Mandatelian Savrip.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we can't give you a full point, so you only get 0.99.
That's almost a holographic version of a point. All right, final question. Yes. What version of The Empire Strikes Back first included the altered scene of Vader talking to the holographic Emperor when the Emperor mentions Luke destroying the Death Star? So which, I'll give you a hint, it's a year. So which year's release of a home version of Empire Strikes Back?
Because the original didn't have the actor that played Palpatine in Jedi, right?
Correct, it was somebody else.
It has to be after the, it has to be after the prequels. So I would say 2004?
Oh, my gosh. Nailed it. 2004. Wow. Brian, I'm a little worried about you today, how this is going to go.
I was worried about me before that, and now I'm just going to raise the white flag.
Well, hold on to your butts, because here's your category. Let's see how you do.
How many does he have?
He's got three. Three, but then there's two butt cheeks each, so it's six.
Is that
six
why
butts.
They call him Three Butt Brian?
Three Butt Brian. Here it is, 3D printing trivia.
Oh, good Lord.
I know. This is going to be good.
This is what happens when you're on this show a lot is... Yeah.
I talk a lot about it.
Scraping the barrel for...
That's exactly right. We're like, what else does Brian like? Okay, 3D right. printing. How about that? What year was MakerBot Industries founded?
Oh, jeez. I'm going to guess right around 2007.
You are right that it's right around it, but wrong in the year. It is 2009.
Mm.
Tom, anything special there? Is it just wrong or...
He gets negative two.
All right.
For being 2 years off.
I shouldn't have asked. All right. Next up, who owns
zero before Clive, he said anything?
I know, I gotta shut up.
Clive Revel, who played the Emperor in Empire Strikes Back. He must have been pissed.
Clive Revel?
Yeah, he's still alive, apparently.
Is he heir to the Revel's fortune, the weird candies you can get there in, or whatever they are in Britain? That's a famous thing.
No, but he was in a TV series called Secret Mountain Fort Awesome in 2011.
Oh, wow. So he went on to better things, is what you're saying.
Also, he played Admiral Davos in Star Wars The Old Republic.
Oh. Mm. Actually, I know that character. Interesting. I didn't know he was in that.
There you go. All trivia. Right. All right. I'm only going to take 1 point off now because I bored you.
Yeah. All right. Here's next one. Who owns the trademarked 3D printing procedure called 3D printing 3DP?
Wow.
I'll give you a hint. It's a prestigious institution that a lot of technical things come out of.
Well, let's say MIT then.
I may have given that away.
You may have helped.
You got it right, though.
You know what? You should take help when it's offered, so you're going to get a half-point bonus on top
nice.
Of it.
Hey, for one more half-point bonus, can you name...
Spell MIT?
Can you say what MIT stands for?
Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
All right, nicely done. Does he get that?
Wow. Yeah,
for sure.
No. How did you know about that rule, Scott?
I shouldn't assume that I can give points out like
you're
that.
Oh, you're dead on.
What are the two main types of filament used in 3D printing?
Ooh, ABS and PLA.
Nicely done. Do not use PVC or you'll all die in the room that you're in.
Right, yeah.
What material is used to smooth out rough edges on 3D prints?
Well, you can use a bunch of techniques.
I'll give you a hint. This one is not sandpaper.
Right. He might be talking about, so there's ABS slurry, like or acetone. Let's say acetone.
You are correct. Acetone
that's
is correct.
The basis of the slurry.
ABS slurries at the 7-Eleven are great.
Oh, they're the best.
You get a cherry slurry.
Yeah. A cherry slurry. Ugh, that sounds awful. Converting a digital model into instructions for a 3D printer is called what?
Well, it's G-code. What else do they call it? You're slicing it.
Oh, well, there. Look at you. You're doing fine today.
Wow, I'm surprised. Who would have thought that my 3D printer knowledge dwarfs my Spice Girls knowledge?
You're like, oh, look, I actually do use a 3D printer.
Yeah, that Spice Girls thing was still a fluke. I still can't believe you got almost all of those wrong. That was weird.
I can't believe it either.
What was the name of MakerBot's first 3D printer kit?
Ooh, what was that? That was, that was the one that had like all the wooden assembly bits, or not wood. It was that press board. Yeah. And it was called, was that the RepRap?
You are incorrect. It was called the Cupcake CNC.
Cupcake.
Which I know sounds like an Android version, but.
Cupcake and you're gonna lose a half point because RepRap is an entirely different.
I know. That it is something. Yeah.
I liked RepRap in the 90s. He really tore it up with the gangster rap. He was great.
Yeah. And then he became an open source platform for building 3D printers.
I know. Who would have thought?
Quite a pivot in his career.
Well, you know, Ice Cube became a kids movie guy. So
right?
It's
exactly.
It all makes sense. What year was the first 3D printer jaw produced? 3D printed jaw, rather.
Jaw? Okay, like
human jaw, like replace your jaw with this printed one.
So they made a whole bunch of keychains, and then they made a jaw. Yeah. I'm going to say it was 2011.
You are so close. 2012.
Oh,
well, you get a tenth of a point.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
They started printing it in 2011.
When did they
finished in 2012?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can just leave this on overnight, right? No.
And then they made the Jawbone keychain.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, final question. What company created the first multicolor 3D printer?
Ooh.
First.
Yeah, it uses the hot end, the split hot end.
And the colors.
Is that Ultimaker?
That is, well, I don't know if that's these guys, but this says Z Corp.
No, okay, nope, that is a different
company, I guess. Okay. All right. I wondered if Z Corp made everything or made a bunch of things or something, because it sounds omnipresent, doesn't it?
It does, right? Z Corp.
That sounds like something RoboCop totally. must take down.
The Terminator and that.
Exactly.
Sounds right. Like they're going to buy New York or something.
It does to me as well.
Right.
Well, there you go. Add those up, Tom. How did they do?
Well, Ibit did a very respectable 3.6 with a hot start. Hot like a 3D printer. And Jaime finished with 7.04.
Oh, that may be a high. I don't think we've kept track, but you may have you certainly have one of the higher scores in the history of the competition. Mm. So well done. May Star Wars holographs never confuse anyone ever again. I don't know what I'm saying. Here's this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Time to predict the future. We do that on the show. It's called Forecast, and it's spelled F-O-U-R cast. That means there's four of us, and we get to make a prediction. We got one here that Tom came up with about, I think it's a prescient topic given what Jaime is busy working on. So,
it's
Tom,
almost
you want to explain?
Like I knew he would be on.
Yeah, how weird.
So I was thinking about Jaime's invention and volumetric displays, holograms, all of that sort of thing. And I said, you know what, Tom? And I said, what, Tom? And I'm like, you talk to yourself too much. And I said, we'll just write it in the doc. And then I wrote, in 100 years, we will have virtual and volumetric displays augmenting reality everywhere we go. And yet, even in that world, we will still be using QWERTY keyboards.
Oh, wow. So aren't there already projected QWERTY keyboards, Jaime, that are similar to, not similar to this, but, you know. Well,
yeah, you can get a keyboard in a little tiny little box that will project it onto a table, and it is indeed a QWERTY keyboard. So. Yeah,
but doesn't it fly in the face a little bit of this? Because the idea, I would think anyway, the idea of this technology making sense and working, and then having all kinds of applications, it seems like these would be opportunities for a new interface with the world. And yet, the first thing we come up with when we're projecting light onto a table is to make a fake keyboard.
Yeah.
That always struck me as a little strange.
I think what happens is that we're a little bit afraid of new things, and we want something of the familiar, something of the old, you know, and we carry it forward.
It's like folders on your desktop.
Yeah, very likely when the final version of the Holovec is out there, it's going to be used to, you know, project a TV screen, mm-hmm. which is, you know. probably what's going
to
happen.
You're right. Probably. Like, we'll just use it for things we already like to use them for. And I've always, we said, we had this conversation on TMS once, Brian, this idea that everybody thinks they want to be the new way we interact with things, but shouldn't we just be okay with what already really
keyboards,
works really
mice,
well?
Trackballs, trackpads, all those things seem to work just fine. And we're already trained in how to use them. And,
sure.
You know, you grow up learning how to type, at least, and some people even touch type on keyboards. I'm not one of them. I still have to look and do it key by key. But yeah, it's a hard thing to replace. And we saw that in our younger years with the whole Dvorak thing and trying to switch to a different keyboard layout and all that.
Old Dvorak thing is the hot new Mevio show. I don't know if you've heard about it.
it's the new name for No Agenda,
hot,
right?
No
Agenda,
hot, yeah. New and Mevio.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I'm digging up some old names. Anyway.
Yeah, my thinking here wasn't even so much towards the projecting the keyboard. It was just that I think we would have moved past the keyboard, or at least started to already, with different kinds of ways to enter inputs. But everybody keeps saying, I need a better keyboard. And what makes the iPad Pro work for me? Oh, I got to add a keyboard. And the fact that the Dvorak keyboard, which scientifically has been proven to be a more efficient way to use a keyboard, hasn't dislodged QWERTY, because we're all like, yeah, but QWERTY's what I'm used to. I feel like this is one of those situations where even though we will come up with better ways to do text entry, will continue to want to have keyboards around.
So you don't even think like we'll get to the point where voice kills it all, because we still need
voice will become another way we enter, but there'll be times when, even if it's subvocal, right? Even if you don't have to speak out loud, there'll be times when people are like, oh yeah, but I just want to use the keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it won't be a generational thing. It's that people will always grow up with keyboards being around and learn to use them and get used to them.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. I mean, I often do, but this makes sense to me.
I'm totally wrong. Here's why. No.
the real question will be whether or not we all still want sort of mechanical, you know, tactile experiences.
Yeah, it's kind of what I'm going for here, is that we will be fine with all our displays just going away and becoming holographic and becoming projections, whether they're directly into our eyes or actually in front of us. But we won't want to give up that physical keyboard.
There's something interesting that happens, and we noticed it while working on the project. There's kind of like an uncanny valley where you're making an image and you start slow and you know, and then it speeds up to the place where it reaches 33 hertz or 33 frames per second, and it just, your brain clicks over and it becomes a thing. It becomes, it's no longer an image, it's actually an object, and I can see that, you know, even though we have all these tiny little objects all over the place, you still want to have something familiar. You still want to want to connect to the past somehow.
Well, I often think of the Tron desk. You guys remember the desk in Tron? When not in the Tron world, but like the real world, and the evil corporate dude had a big black desk.
Computer on the desk.
Yeah, and then what would happen is a fake keyboard would light up like it was, you know, not holographic, but you know, like some sort of display keyboard. And he would type on that thing and seem to do pretty well. My thinking back then as a kid was that what must be happening so that he doesn't have to look at the keyboard, because he wasn't looking at it, he was looking at the screen. I thought what was happening is there was some sort of, not haptic feedback, but some kind of like little electrical fields that would make his fingers feel like they were in a place. I don't know how to explain that very well.
Yeah, you probably thought about it more than they did.
I probably did. And I guess what I'm wondering is, like, combining that kind of technology, a technology that would project objects in front of you or around you, and then you being able to interact in them and feel like they're there because there's some resistance, without wearing gloves and things that create haptic feedback. That's really the holy grail, right? That's what we really want.
That's the next thing. It's basically, and just like holograms mean something in our heads and unnecessarily what they are. Holograms are specific interference patterns created on photographic plates. However, we think of it as a hologram, as a, you know, 3D projection is a hologram. The same way, I think what you're talking about is force fields. Mm-hmm. I think what we want is you know, fields of energy that gives us that tactile sensation. And yeah, I think that's the holy grail. I think that's the next thing. And there's some there's some interesting work on this. For example, at CERN, they hold antihydrogen in this they call it a magnetic bottle, but it's antihydrogen is neutral. So they have to basically they're holding antimatter in this force field little bottle, and I can see that, you know, being an interesting field of study and research for the future. You know, try to find a way to now that we have 3-dimensional projections, try to make them hard.
Well, mm-hmm. Brian, if you could talk about Spice Girls now, that that would really help balance the show out so that it's really not so smart.
Would that be the you need the pepper to that salt?
Which right. Spice Girl do you think could be held with most effect by a magnetic bomb?
That seems easy.
Which one will be the first to be digitally, holographically projected?
I feel Sporty
of course
would break
the answer
out.
Is, yeah, the answer is always Sporty.
Yeah. Who says she's not one now, honestly? Well,
is a magnetic bottle blonde? Is that what you're saying?
Whoa.
Mind blown.
That is some fancy stuff, and I love this idea. So, Tom, I hope you're both right and wrong, that we still that we retain part of our tactile humanity, but we do it in a 3D generated world. Let's do some emails or a email. We get emails right here at currentgeek@gmail.com, and we got one from James who says this. Hey, you guys, what's your take on the idea that Spider-Man will still show up in Civil War? Not sure I jive with that rumor anymore. Love to hear your thoughts. He didn't say why he doesn't jive with that rumor anymore. But James, the rumor was, or the talk was, that because of the deal the MCU struck with Sony, that part of that deal was that they would help them make the new Spider-Man movie and make it great. And in return, Spider-Man could show up at the end of Civil War. At least that was the talk at the time. Maybe they meant a movie that was more outlying, like Avengers 3 or something. But I don't know that any of that's changed or that we should expect anything different. I've heard some people say, well, the trailer doesn't show him. Well, of course the trailer doesn't show Spider-Man. They're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be the big surprise twist. And in fact, I think it's probably most likely to be in the post-credit.
You think so? You think they'll wait and just show them at the end? I don't know. I think if you've got carte blanche to include Spider-Man in your movie, you're not going to wait and only use...
Well, that's assuming they have carte blanche. What if Sony's saying, okay, you can have him for this one movie and that's it. And then Marvel says, well, can we do a teaser with him? And they're like, okay, well, that's cross-promotional. Okay, you can do a teaser in Civil War, but that's it.
I could see that.
I could see a world where that's true. I'm not saying that's actually what's going to happen, but I could see that. Yeah, possible.
You'd think if we knew, well, if they have carte blanche, I feel like we'd have heard more. I don't think they do, though.
I thought we did. I thought we did hear this, or was? Am I just projecting?
I mean, we've heard that they have the rights to get him.
Yeah,
didn't we?
I thought we heard that the way the deal was. Well, the way they struck the deal just meant that they were going to have a lot of crossover help. That they were going to be able to help each other make their movies. And that they were going to have access to things they wouldn't otherwise, which I guess that just means the Disney Marvel machine and Sony's not on their own. But I don't know what they got so much in return. They want more than just, they would have to be more than just a nice guy thing to say, hey, we'll help you out.
Yeah. Sony and Marvel announced that Sony is bringing Marvel into the amazing world of Spider-Man. Kevin Feige will produce the next Spider-Man installment with Amy Pascal.
Okay, so maybe it's just money.
Oh.
Maybe it's just we get this huge portion
on
of the
June
profits.
July 28th, 2017.
Okay. Well, I'm in either way. Jaime, do you think we'll, what do you think they're going to do? He's going to have them do a flyby, like, hello, real quick or something. What do you think?
I imagine like a big, I think there's probably going to be a scene with a whole bunch of heroes, and you're going to have him in you know, on the side or whatever. But because I don't think they would have gone through all the trouble otherwise. I think he's going to have to be.
Wait a minute. I just read that wrong. Under the deal, the new Spider-Man will first appear in a Marvel film from Marvel Cinematic Universe. Sony Pictures will thereafter release the next installment of Spider-Man on July 28, 2017 in a film co-produced by Kevin Feige. From Marvel.com, by the way.
Yeah.
And it says... Spider-Man will show up in one of our movies.
But you have to define what appear means. I don't know what that means. Like, is it literally like a Stan Lee cameo style, or is it
right.
bigger than that? I don't know.
Well, he's so important to the Civil War storyline, isn't he? He's like the center of it. And I think
he really was in the comics.
He is in the comics.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk that Black Panther is going to sort of be your guy here.
Yeah, but you don't feel the same about Black Panther revealing his identity and then, you know, having to have, you know, trouble because he has to register and whatnot.
Oh, I completely agree. Like his art. I mean, I think Black Panther's awesome, but he's no Peter Parker in terms of impact on the
right.
universe.
And you find out he's, you know, Prince of Wakanda or whatever. It's like, okay. No, I'm sorry. I'm Prince of Wakanda.
I think if he was actually in Civil War, they would be teasing us on that.
Yeah.
Like if he was a main part of the thread. But I still think it's possible that he could show up as a cameo or in a post movie.
I think that we still have more trailers to go, and they didn't want to spill all their candy in the lobby.
That's right? True.
They're saving.
Could very well be that.
Yeah.
I don't
hate it when I spill my candy.
I know. Especially in the lobby because people see you do it.
Let's all go to the lobby and clean up that candy.
Yeah. Let's all go clean up the candy. If you'd like to send in equally interesting questions and thoughts and comments, you're certainly welcome to there at home, currentgeek@gmail.com. You can always do that. If you leave us a voicemail, we'll play it, 801-471-0462. And that's going to do it for this episode of Current Geek.
Whoa, hold on.
What'd I miss?
Hold on. Breaking news. The IMDb page for Captain America Civil War. Here is the cast. Scarlett Johansson, Natasha Romanoff, Tom Holland, Peter Parker.
What?
There you go.
Okay, I got one for you then. Let's see how good
Chris Evans and Steve Rogers and on and on.
Let's see how good. No, I just mean how good is. Hold on, where is this? Here it is. Let's look at the entry for Scott Johnson, seen in Race to World First. His bio says, "This is me, by the way." Scott Johnson is a striking and somewhat boyishly handsome-looking, often with a ponytail, and usually impeccably dressed action star who burst onto the martial arts action film scene in 1988 in the fast-paced Frog Pants film Extra Life Radio.
You're saying anyone can put anything on IMDb.
But they police these big names.
I totally agree, but it gave me an opportunity to share my stupid bio that somebody did for me.
Producer of Sword and Laser.
What's weird is that's the same bio as Steven Seagal.
I know, I don't get it. It's almost as if someone copied and pasted
Steven Seagal must have ripped it off from you.
How weird. Anyway, yes. So I think that leads... If Tom's reading of that, I think his reading is correct.
Whether that's actually correct or not, I don't know.
He didn't read it wrong, but if it's correct, that's interesting because you wouldn't normally have that right up in the credits. I haven't heard anybody talk about that though. That's really weird.
Yeah, that's what makes me. Tom Holland says Captain America Civil War trailer blew his mind. Spider-Man confirmed to appear in Captain America Civil War 8 hours ago from the Sun Times National.
Oh, this just happened.
Yeah.
Oh, Sun Times though.
Sometimes national.
What?
During a set visit, EW reportedly saw Tom Holland, who was cast as Peter Parker last spring, filming scenes for a major battle in Captain America Civil War.
Wow. All right. I guess we're in then. Thank you, Tom Holland, for blowing the news. Now we know he's in. I mean,
Robert Downey Jr. divulged the truth to the magazine. Don Cheadle and I were just going, wow, dude, look at this. We're now like the old guard.
Wow, dude, look at this. All right. I'm going to believe everything I hear from now on from IMDb. That's what I'm taking away from this.
Especially when it mentions Don Cheadle.
Yeah. Anytime Don Cheadle is in there. A big, huge thanks to our guests today. Jaime, let's start with you. I do this every time.
Scott.
That's because I'm a dingus. That's how you pronounce dingus. Tell us once more about this awesome Kickstarter. How long is it going to run? Where can people support it and where they can find it?
It's going to run a month, a little bit more because of holidays. Mm-hmm. And you should be able to find it at kickstarter.com/Holovect, I believe. We have a short.
Yeah, where did we put that in? Here it is, tiny.cc/Holovect. That's Holovect, like hologram vector, but short.
And it should go live later tonight, actually.
Oh, that's awesome. I've seen preview of the video. I was not prepared for how, scientifically grounded it is. You see a lot of Kickstarters, you're like, oh, okay, that's great and everything, but I'll see it when I believe it. But this thing, you guys, this is for real. This looked like for real business to me.
It's very interesting because we spent so much time, making it happen. I to tell a short story, worked for a long, long time on it, and, the second we had a completely, a single voxel in air. I was working in my lab at home, and I just yelled and called my wife. I was like, "Honey, honey, come here, we made it!" And wow. She showed up, and she says, "Oh, it's a dot."
You're like, "No, but it's a round dot. It's a voxel."
Yeah, a volumetric dot. That's insane.
I can't wait to play Tempest on this thing.
Yeah.
No, but it's very interesting. We spend so much time trying to draw different 3D stuff that and to make it work, that we haven't developed all the things that we can draw. We don't know exactly. For example, it's hard to draw a cube because you don't know how many lines you're going to make, stuff like that. So I'm super excited to see what people do with it, and it's going to be wonderful.
I think super exciting, and congrats on the whole thing. Can't wait to see how things go for you. Go check it out, everybody. Back it, be a part of what I believe will be history. Brian Ibbett, what's going on with you, man? What fanciful scientific breakthroughs are you working toward?
I play songs on a show and record it.
Whoa, stand back, everybody. Podcasting's back.
That's right.
Dude, Coverville's 10 years plus old. It's a proud moment.
11, yeah.
Jeez.
It's, crazy. No, it's just had my 1107th show or something. It was Frank Sinatra this last week. Next week, it'll be a tribute, obviously, to Scott Weiland, who we lost today. And possibly, I don't know, maybe the Monkees or something. That'll go really well together, won't it?
Yeah, won't it, though?
Stone Temple Monkees. Yes, it'll be.
That's my favorite Tomb Raider DLC, Stone Temple Monkees.
Oh, that was a hard one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a hard level.
Really hard.
Between Coverville and TMS and FilmSac, that's you can pretty much find me everywhere, either coverville.com or frogpants.com.
Oh, I got to watch FilmSac tonight. Thanks for the reminder.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you for being here. It's Coverville on Twitter, of course. Jaime, what's your Twitter account?
At TensorGuy.
TensorGuy. T-E-N-S-O-R guy, everybody. Tom Meredith.
We're breaking news all over the place today on Kirk Geek, Scott.
Beep, 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 beep.
This just in. The Holovect Kickstarter is approved. You can actually back it right now.
Oh my gosh, right now? Hold on, let me play my shocking music again. Go now! tiny.cc/Holovect. Okay, cool, I got approved. Sweet.
Like Jaime just like messaged me. Like, it just got approved this second. What do we do?
Congratulations. Oh, that's very cool.
That's awesome, man. Very excited for you. Tom, any other breaking news or things you'd like to mention?
No, I sit in my basement and I look at a camera and talk. Go to tiny.cc/Holovect right now and back this thing. I want this thing to become real.
I do too. I'm not pimping anything I make tonight.
I mean, it is real. I want it to become real, like out in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I do want people to go get the Crate Joy thing. So do that. But outside of that, I really want you to support this. Yeah, you can do both. Do both. Huge thanks to both of our guests. Thank you, everybody, for listening. All you live folks as well. As always, you guys are amazing. Our theme was by Andrew Allen. I can't even talk. Leave us a voicemail. 801-471-0462. We're at Current Geek on Twitter. Scott Johnson and Ace Detect as well. CurrentGeek.com for everything else. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
Next time.
We'll see you next time. Oh, yeah, you did the gavel. Good.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. I just wanted to send a note here, as it's Thanksgiving in the U.S. and the holiday season is beginning, that I'd like to thank Tom and Scott for putting together a great show every week and letting Legal Geek be a part of it, as well as the audience. You guys give me plenty of great comments and suggestions. So with that in mind, let's look ahead at what we have to be thankful for from the Supreme Court coming up. This will be a preview of some of the cases that we'll cover on future Legal Geek segments. In the 2015 term, the Supreme Court is looking at affirmative action in college admissions with a second look at the Fisher v. University of Texas case. Another case this term is Fredericks v. California Teachers Association, where there's a First Amendment challenge to having to pay compulsory dues in public sector labor unions. This was most recently decided in 1977 and upheld that compulsory dues could be enforced. Many states have also taken on drawing their legislative districts to try to stop the gerrymandering that can sometimes occur, and in the Evenwell v. Abbott case, the Supreme Court will finally take this on to see if a challenge to the way Texas draws its state legislative districts will stand. Other issues to watch are a potential abortion restriction case in Whole Woman's Health v. Cole, and also another birth control controversy under the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and Little Sisters of the Poor versus Burwell. There's also potentially a chance for multiple death penalty cases to come before the Supreme Court this term, which is notable because a couple of justices, including Justice Breyer and Justice Ginsburg, seem to indicate that it is time for the death penalty to be deemed unconstitutional. That would be a very big shift if that were to occur. So let's look forward to these great Supreme Court cases and our analysis of this and other nerdy legal topics as we move forward through the holiday season and into 2016. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy, and check out my other podcast, Talking 10.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.